From the streets of Melrose Park to the trading floor of the Merc, he's fought for every dollar he's ever earned. And now, with personal liberty and our system of capitalism under assault in America, he's here to seize back our rights from the government. With a cigar in one hand and a copy of the Declaration of Independence in the other, he's Sean Thompson. And this is the Sean Thompson Show.
This looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy, because it feels so empty.
So last night, while scouring the once great city, now ghetto, and the destination of corrupt policies, I heard this story.
Tonight, a leaked Chicago Teachers Union contract proposal is raising some questions about financial assistance for teacher housing.
So before I wanted to let the propagandists of the Fourth Reich tell me what it is, I said, let's go to the source. Let's go to the guy who knows everything. Guy who's been working on this tirelessly on behalf of the good people trapped in a bad location. He is the executive editor of Wire Points, Mark Glennon. How are you?
Very good, John. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about this leaked contract. I mean, aside from the fact that it's going to cost us $50 billion for 5 out of 100 kids that can read in some areas, what does it look like in this contract of the golden goose of incompetence and corruption?
Well, she's actually hidden it pretty well. That document was leaked to the Illinois Policy Institute, was able to get it somehow and publish it. That's one of the items that's in there is housing assistance for teachers. We don't know what else will be in it. And she gave this big speech at the City Club that I wrote about. And, she talked largely about transparency and everything, but she didn't give any other indication of what it will be in it, except she threw out that $50 billion figure. And most importantly, she said, don't ask. And she repeated, don't ask how much it costs. You know, this is so important that I'm tired of hearing this question. Nobody has a right to ask how much this should cost.
Well, I hate to take the lie that is given to me by mafia members, even when they, in particular, when they work for the government. But in general, I hate it. And the reality is, when you factor in what the average salary is, when you factor in the health care and the retirement, it's a staggering amount of money for even first year teachers. They want you to believe it isn't. But when you look at the median income, you're well in the six figures. Well. So I don't believe that it's for housing. I believe it's for the more than 50% of Chicago public school teachers that know that the Chicago public school system sucks and they have to send their kids to private schools like Stacey Davis Gates. Do you think I'm on to something?
Oh, absolutely. Look, we spend $29,000 a year per student in Chicago public schools. That's all in with the capital budget properly counted. But I mean, think about that. Could you and I put together a school for $29,000 for a student? I think we'd do a pretty damn good job, better than the other good school, and they're not doing it.
So, Mark, I believe that the reason that they work tirelessly to take away choices of their citizens, but more importantly, to close private schools, is because private schools is the exact fact of how you can educate a kid far better than a Chicago public school system, because they do it at about $7,000 a kid. And that's the real cost to educate it when you don't have the costs of corruption. But what I'm more fascinated about is the way in which they are allowed to rate themselves and give themselves a grade, because it's really an anomaly when you have such low performance from the actual students, aside from the fact these are the kids you're watching on the news destroy the quality of life in Chicago. Aside from that. That's a fact that there is a school in Chicago, there's a school district where 5 out of 100 kids can read. But yet all of their teachers are given a 97% proficiency rating. So how do we get at least the rating system back? Because the reality is they've got the perfect scheme. They grade themselves. They cook the books. They eliminate testing. You've got the mayor himself who admits when he was a teacher, he eliminated tests because the kids can't really pass tests. But the test of civility is the one that they fail on a regular basis. Do you think there's a way to get this system back, or do we just have to scrap the entire thing?
There are two ways. Absolutely, you could get it back. The state could act. The state could intervene and do pretty much whatever it wants if it ever had the guts to try to fix this. But it stands aside, you know, with mandating testing or whatever. And, yeah, they don't want to be raided in any way. Brandon Johnson, as you said, was quite express about that. They simply don't believe in objective testing. The more drastic view is to simply reconstitute the system entirely. And I was just looking at an article I wrote 9 years ago saying to do that. It's not that hard to do. There's precedent for it. That's what Detroit did. They just scrapped their old school district, started a new one when they went through bankruptcy. And that's an option, too.
Well, the other option for citizens is to realize that it's only in these Democrat strongholds that this scheme gets the virtue shield that it somehow is able to grasp and convey to the people as they continue down the road of the absence of American principles, as now their answer is what they call a mansion tax. But the bulk of that so-called mansion tax will ironically fall on businesses who have been unable to stay in business, but the only asset they have is real estate. And when they sell it, they're going to be taxed exorbitantly again. Chicago is one of the few places that taxes both the buyer and seller. So it's not a it's not an exit tax. It's a possession tax. It's a penalty for buying in Chicago. Do you think it's just that so many people think it's normal to pay these kind of taxes that they accept it? I'm amazed at the amount of Chicagoans that are willing to accept it. Or has it really become a Soviet city in America?
Now that'll be an interesting one to see how the vote comes out, because a lot of people will see it as you know, somebody else's problem there. But they think they're renters, that they're not paying it. They don't realize that that gets passed through to renters. But the whole thing is farcical. I mean, it's supposed to raise $100 million. Well, how many housing units does that get you? How many low income apartment units that go for this? It costs the city $400,000 or $500,000 a piece. Get you a few hundred units per year. You know, it's just not going to dent the problem. And the cost of it in terms of running off developers and sending out another signal that you're so hostile to owners and would be owners is going to be enormous. It'll far exceed the value of that. So hopefully the public is going to see through us, but I'm not terribly optimistic on that one.
Well, what's astonishing is over the last year, the kind of increases that people have endured. I've got a clip on my board from a few months ago where a third-generation business in Chicago received a 480% increase in taxes. The auction system that the Cook County has raped the citizens of Chicago with such corrupt lawyers like Ed Burke's firm and the rest of it, who manipulate the tax auction property, used to be some meat on the bone when they could steal taxes out from under people and businesses. But yet, even they're not willing to do that. As more and more tax auction properties go unpurchased, do we really know how many actual properties are in fact paying taxes, or are we just guessing that people are taking it? As you see the abandoned buildings, the empty square feet, the commercial buildings in what used to be the financial district selling for less than 10% of what they sold for just 10 years ago. I mean, this to me is a nosedive. It's like that old bankruptcy joke, slow at first and fast in the end. Can it go any faster when you see such iconic buildings as in the financial district sell for $4 million? And I'm specifically talking about 330 West Adams that sold 10 years ago for $58 million, sells for $4.9 million. I mean, this is something that I think would be front page news, yet it's hard-pressed to see it if you're not in the business. Do you think that other states are aware of the collapse of Chicago?
Yeah, boy, you're right about so many things there. This is the one that really scares me, the doom loop, as it's called nationally, because of that drop in downtown commercial office space. And as soon as that starts hitting the appraised values of those buildings and their taxes appropriately drop commensurately, you know, which is to say they're having in value, many of those buildings, that's got to get passed along somewhere to homeowners and everything. You know, the actual occupancy rate downtown right now is 55%. And this is going to be a slow drip over the next few years. As those leases come up, they're not going to get renewed. It's going to push the values down further. This does get a lot of attention, you know, in the financial press nationally, to the extent that it's even a threat to regional banks. You know, there's a projection that several hundred banks will go down because of their exposure on those loans, but it has not been on the front pages of the regular press, especially not in Chicago. That's a big one. And just one more quick thing. You asked how many people are not being properly counted in terms of no taxes being paid? No, we don't really know. We spent a lot of time trying to figure that out and came up dry. But I think in some of the worst off suburbs, especially in the south suburbs, there's a lot of them.
You mean like Dalton, where the mayor steals $7 million from the people and it's just a news story and she's still somehow the mayor. She gets to veto her own audit, which is fascinating. And I'm wondering, as you watch the bastardization of American law and you realize that we walked around for decades through our life thinking that American law protected the principles of our nation, that something like a tax on people who were able to acquire money after being taxed and all the rest of it. And now you have an alderman, a communist, come out and talk about how he's eyeing trust funds and individual wealth and assets. And there are judges that you would think, nah, we're going to stop it. And in fact, the Manchin tax was stopped. But yet what you realize is it's all the philosophy and the political party in America. There is no law, right? As another judge reinstates the opportunity for the Manchin tax. So are you confident that ultimately we can turn to the actual rule of our nation, the principle of property rights? Or was I more than just making a quip when I called it a Soviet city? It's starting to sound like a true Soviet system in what used to be an incredible city with multiple successes and multiple stories of achievement and wealth. Is this something that you think is being underreported?
It's being underreported, and we're not there yet. It's going to get a lot worse before it turns around. I am optimistic that, you know, nationally, the rule of law will be restored eventually, provided we fight for it. And it's by no means a certain outcome. These people truly are essentially communists. They may not be that by name, but when you start talking about a wealth tax, as you said, the alderman who chairs this new revenue committee, he's a first year alderman. You know, he has no background, whatever, in finance. He has no idea about the constitutional obstacles to a wealth tax or a progressive tax, all the other things he proposes. But he throws this stuff out, and a lot of it's going to get shot down. But who knows what stupid thing they're going to come up with?
Well, you know what's funny is I was on the phone yesterday with a young guy. I assume he's young. He was a finance guy for one of the big banks, and I'm in the middle of a deal in Florida, and he's trying to get the deal. And he's from Chicago, and he says, you know, I can't help but notice you have a Chicago number, but I look, you know, you live in Florida, you do business in Florida. The guy is from Chicago, and he's in Florida. He's like, you know, the word on the street is the bank is going to maybe lay off more people. I'm kind of concerned about my job. Do you think I should move? And I almost started to laugh. And I said to him, you do realize that since the late 90s, hedge funds, and they used to call them real estate syndicates back then, in the 80s and 90s, they became real estate investment trusts. And this is a very well-known thing that some of the best and biggest and even medium-sized real estate investment trusts have never acquired any portfolio that holds Chicago real estate in it. They haven't done this for nearly 30 years. So the fact is the writing has been on the wall for the collapse of the once great city. And all they needed were the right circumstances, because like every other collapsing nation, for some reason, people would rather double down on communism and stupidity and government supremacy than say, wait a minute, why aren't the smartest people in the real estate sector actually transacting in Chicago? And you see what's going on as you hear the rumors of, oh, the market's hot and the really, how do you think professionals get away in operating in Chicago? Because the reason I say this to you is, as somebody who was proud of what I did, I could not in good conscience recommend that my friends, family, and clients actually jumped in and played hot potato when the smartest money wouldn't. Don't you think this is something that there might be some libel if you have these real estate companies selling this failed system to naive, uneducated buyers?
I don't think there's legal liability, but that's a topic we've thought a lot about. And a lot of business people around here, they got a stake in Illinois. You know, they own restaurants or something here, and they, or their friends do. So they don't want to badmouth things too much. We talk to these people all the time, and they write us checks sometimes. You know, we're a nonprofit, and they say things to us privately that they don't say in public. They know how bad it is. That's part of the problem. And then, but you talk to people out of town. They know how bad it is. I was just in South Carolina where things were booming, and as you know from your work in Florida, there's people all over. Look at us like we're from some different planet in Chicago that we'd be allowing these things to happen. But it's going to get a lot worse.
So do you think that the non-Democrat candidate running for any office throughout the country should use Don't Chicago My Country or Don't New York My Country? Which one would you go with?
I got to throw California in that mix. I just saw there's a bill in California now to give down payment free mortgages to illegal aliens.
Yeah, why not?
It's a contest.
Well, Mark, I'm going to save you a table in the camps for the gin rummy game, because sooner or later, guys who talk like me and you will be rounded up as they were in Cuba or Venezuela or the Soviet Union. In the meantime, I hope you go to work every day, because Mark Glennon, the work you do at Wire Points is essential for people to wake up. And I think you've done a phenomenal job. And where can the people go to support you, keep an eye on you, and kind of learn what they should have learned in the news? Where can they go?
Firepoints.org, and we got a free daily newsletter that collects all the major articles from all viewpoints. So Firepoints.org newsletter is free. Sean, it's always great to hear an authentic Chicago accent when I talk to you too.
Come on, man! I don't have an accent. Everybody else does. Mark Glennon, thank you for making time. I appreciate it, brother.
All right, take care.
Thank you.